Hey folks, welcome back to the Math Teacher Lounge. I'm your co-host, Dan Meyer.
And I am Bethany Lockhart Johnson, and I'm your co-host, Dan. Hi.
We're co-host. Hey, great to see you.
Dan, this is the last episode of season three. Three seasons.
It's got to have a cliffhanger. What will the cliffhanger be, you know?
The cliffhanger is that we love having guests. Like, it's one of our most favorite things because selfishly, we love to talk to all of these amazing folks who are doing this interesting research and thinking about amazing things. But for this last episode, it's just you and I, Dan. Cliffhanger.
Yeah. Oh, I like this. I like this. No, so the cliffhanger was last episode, and people are all like, so who's the last guest going to be of the season before we roll out into summer? And yes, as Bethany said, we love all the fascinating guests we've had on throughout these last few seasons. And we realized who is more fascinating to each other than both of us. You know, let's talk to each other about things, right? You get that. You get that. Or is this, am I alone here in this? We had this idea about what we should talk about here. And that's this. I am on Twitter a lot. I'm at Dede Meyer on Twitter. Throw me a follow. Might follow back. Who knows? I don't tweet much. Bethany, what's your handle on Twitter? Let them know.
I'm at Lockhart EDU. And I was much more active pre-mamahood, but I'm still up in there. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yep. In there. Yeah. Great. So I've been keeping track of the hottest conversations in math education Twitter, the conversations that the most people who kind of describe themselves as math teachers and their bios and whatnot have been replying to. I've got some little things working in the background, keeping track of this sort of thing. And so we are going to bring for you folks some of those extremely hot conversations, and even better than the questions, which we hope you'll reply to and tag us in your replies, even more than those questions, we'll bring you our answers to those questions. Can you believe that? We'll fully settle these questions, won't we,
oh
Bethany?
Gosh.
Won't we? Yeah.
Oh, geez, Louise. No.
Yep.
I am Dan Meyer. The point is not our final word on it. The point is this episode, we're furthering the conversation. We want to hear from listeners about what do you think.
You're right. Get so you all need someone in your life like Bethany who will help you become the best version of yourself. So here's the deal. We have several questions in a few different categories. We're going to bust through some quick ones pretty quick. And there's some meaty ones as well. Let's get into it. The first questions come to you all and us, courtesy of MTL guest Howie Wah, who has a renowned knack for just creating math memes, but also conversation starters that really capture the curiosity and answers of a grateful nation. So Howie's first question, which I'll pose to Bethany, is what's your favorite number, Bethany, and why is it your favorite number?
Oh, I love it. Okay, well, first thing that came to my mind is 12, because it's a highly divisible number. I mean, ooh, 2, 6, 3, 4. Like, I love it. And it coincides with the day and month of my birth, which, like, the double, come on, 12. I don't know. Am I giving away, like, my bank security code or anything by saying that?
Yeah. What's your favorite PIN?
Me change my PIN. Yeah, but it's just such a happy number. Well, 12 is, you know, 10 and two more. Anyway, love it. What about you, Dan? What's your favorite number and why?
I'm into it. Yeah, I think I would choose 16. 16 because, you know, like it's the first number for me where it was like, oh, you can keep on making numbers forever. Where I'm like, okay, 2 times 2 is 4. Great. We all like, it's kind of like an elemental kind of like expression in mathematics. 2 times 4. 4 times 2 is 8. Okay, fine. That's like but then 8 times 2 is 16. And it's like, oh, you can just keep on doubling that thing over and over and over again. And I can recall feeling pretty excited that numbers are just like out there for the finding, for the taking. Cool stuff.
I'm sorry. Wait, I have to interrupt. You went 2 times 4 is 8. And you didn't go 4 times 4 is 16. You went 8 times 2 is 16. You wanted to keep doubling the two of the same. Okay.
Yep. You can keep on doubling. You can just keep on doubling numbers and it just keeps on rolling. See,
more evidence our brain works very differently.
We learned more about each other. Let me keep this rolling with Howie questions, okay? Howie says, if you could co-teach with one teacher from Twitter, who would you choose?
Oh. It has to be a teacher?
Or anybody, I guess. I mean, like, I know you love Oprah.
Could I co-teach with Oprah?
Yeah, so there we are. Yep, okay, fair enough. We have to work Oprah into every single episode. That's
I just would love to sit and, like, we'd read together. We'd read to the students, mm-hmm. and then we'd talk. I mean, obviously be Oprah, but if we're thinking more of, like, MTBOS, like, Math Twitter blogosphere land, I suppose the person I would want to co-teach with honestly, it would probably be Allison Hintz, one of our former guests as well.
Yep.
Her book, Mathematizing Children's Literature with Anthony Smith, that book, I just love the idea of sitting and doing a read aloud and then diving into some juicy math that's, like, inspired by what comes out of that read aloud. So yes, that's who I picked. Allison, let's co-teach.
Shout out to Allison.
What about you?
Yep. I would choose MTL guest, Adil Abdul-Kader. Because, and this relates to Allison and, you know, and also Elham Kazemi, they talked about in, you know, our episode, about, teacher timeouts, and, like, I'm choosing someone who I think is like I've never seen Adil teach, but I, you know, work with Adil at Desmos and think she's fantastic. But what I really want in a co-teacher is someone that I can say, whoa, timeout. Do you see what's going on here? This is really interesting. What should we do next about this? And have, like, a little strategy sesh and in front of the kids, and no one gets, you know, freaked out by that. And I think that that'd be a pile of fun. Bill seems like she's got, like, that kind of would be receptive to that kind of interaction, teacher to teacher. So that's my vote right there.
Opportunity for you to grow your own practice, Dan.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. 100%.
So, Dan, I actually have a question for you from Howie. If we're on the Howie tweet train, I have one from Howie too.
Howie had some fire tweets this current year. Yep.
Dan, I want to know, do you prefer doing math in pen or pencil?
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I see that Howie says, I don't mean to start any drama, but, and then ask the question.
But.
Like, I think that Howie lives for drama. You know, I think he's messy math and lives for drama. He knows what he's doing with this question here. He knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I would just say it depends. Is that cheating? Like, if I'm doing math to learn, or if we are learning in that process, then I want to use pen, actually. Like, I want to see the tracks of the thinking. And if we're doing it for presentation, like if I'm presenting something, like I want to, like I that's an area where I'd be fine to not erase things. I'd want to, like, prep it so it's, you know, so we are just, I guess you could use pen for presentation also, just pen, period. But I want to see the tracks of the thinking if we're doing some learning versus presentation. What about you?
Well, I heard the voice in my head telling one of my kindergartners, no, you cannot do that in sparkly pen, you need to do it in pencil. And I was like, wait, whose voice is that? It was one of my math teachers telling me I couldn't do it in pen. Why couldn't this kid do it in pen? Sure, do it in a sparkly pen. So I want to say, like, do it in pen. And since usually pen is what I have around, I mean, I do crosswords in pen, Dan.
Wow. Yeah, with a piece of paper and math, you can you have lots of room to kind of, like, revise and cross off. But those little boxes on the crossword, that says a lot about your commitment to pen.
I got really good at making an A into an H or a P or whatever we need. So okay. I would say like, hey, if you're in the room with your kiddos and you're doing math, if somebody wants to do pen, let them do pen. But I do know that I've seen teachers say, you need to do pen so that I can see all of your thinking. So I think I hear what you're saying, but, like, do you think it should be like a classroom rule or something?
No. I mean, I'm going to ask you, like, how'd you get to this destination? And I want to know process somehow. And I think you'll get tired of having to explain it verbally rather than just, you know, like, showing, just don't erase stuff. Don't scratch stuff off. Let's see how you're getting there. That is what I'm into.
Thanks, Howie, for that trio of thought-provoking tweets, because I genuinely wanted to know what Dan thought and what our listeners think. I mean, Dan, I gotta say, Howie, you say you don't want to cause drama, but I gotta say I'm with Dan on that. These are some pretty hot questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we're still friends though, which so I'm happy about that. Our next section, I got a few more questions queued up here, and these ones relate to kind of advice for educators, advice for yourself, good advice, bad advice, that kind of thing. So let's jump in. I would love to know. This one's from Pernille Rip, and I'm very curious, Bethany. What is the worst teaching advice you have gotten in your life ever?
Worst teaching advice was, that's okay, just move on anyway. And that was in terms of pacing. It was like, you know, students needed to do a deeper dive. And they're like, the teacher who I was chatting with said, no, just, it's fine. It's fine. Just move on. Just move on to the next chapter. That was probably the worst advice because no, I don't think that's what I should have done at all.
Right.
But I was a first year teacher and I was trying to figure it out. And I learned that that was not good advice. And I understand the pressure of pacing, but it was like totally antithetical to the type of listening to my students that I want to do in my craft. And this teacher meant well, but that was not good advice, teacher. Mm-hmm. What about you, Dan? What is the worst teaching advice?
I dig that. That feels similar to one of the replies to Pernille here. Francis Klein says, never let them know you've made a mistake being particularly bad advice. You know, just this like idea of like moving along, you know, covering your tracks, not, you know, like backtracking or admitting mistake. Those all feel kind of a piece. The worst advice I ever received, I wasn't given this often, but it's echoed by a lot of the commenters here on this tweet, which is don't smile until X, Y, or Z, where X, Y, and Z are like Christmas, October, December, January. Just the idea that you've got to
develop. What?
Did you never hear this from anybody? Don't smile until Christmas.
No.
Perhaps this is more of a
as a kindergarten teacher.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Can you imagine? So this might be
I don't smile when the second they walk in, the tears, the parents' tears, the kids' tears, and I'm just stoic.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, explain it to me.
Yeah. Well, the idea is that, you know, for older kids, they're scoping you, they're clocking you for weakness, you know, they're looking at you, like they're looking to take advantage. And so like, don't smile until Christmas is like, hey, you can always relax your discipline, but you can't unrelax it if you start out, you know, Mr. Happy Pants Meyer, which I just, that was.
Smile perceived as weakness.
Yeah. Very obviously. Poor advice, you know, like eventually you come to realize that like having a rapport in a relationship that is trusting and warm and demanding, that has high expectations, that's the best kind of classroom management, not some kind of like persona built around, you know, like intimidation or, you know, stoicism, that kind of thing. So terrible, terrible advice.
I feel like I did have a few of those math classes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. you loved them, right? They were like your favorite math classes. Yeah. I mean, it was a blast, right?
Well, so we have to ask the opposite. Thank you, yep. Danielle Willingham, who said, what's the best advice you got? But hold on, Dan. He didn't just want the best advice. He wanted the best advice in three words.
Oh yeah, he doesn't want a book or a dissertation or even a blog post or even a tweet. Wants just three words.
I think maybe that might have been to me.
this is someone who's doesn't have much time for this advice. Wants it distilled down. I'm just obviously stalling here as I try to think about this. They're also there's just like so much nuance lost here. I would say listen to students. Which I can't say more than that. No, I guess I'm done. I guess I can't say more than that there. But listen to students.
You're done.
About that you're in a bad place if you are not listening carefully to students. How about you?
Okay, mine is ask lots questions.
Nice, because I filled in the word. No. I was able to kind of infer that. I did that. I got that.
Wait. I could have said many. Wait, I could have said many. Ask many questions.
Strong.
So, yeah. You know, no isolation, like don't put yourself in a bubble. Ask not just your students, but the teachers. Ask a lot of questions. You don't have to have it all figured out.
Into it. Very much into it.
Thanks, Daniel. Thanks, Pernille.
Yeah. Daniel and Pernille, both great questions there about advice, best and worst. Another fire tweet popped up earlier this year from Dr. Christopher Childs. which was name one thing every educator should stop doing.
Oh, I don't know. This kind of ties into my best advice about asking questions. Should be like,
stop not asking questions.
Avoid the isolation. I really love this idea of when we can, popping into each other's classrooms, co-teaching, building this collaborative nature. You know, Elham Kazemi in our interview talked about this idea of like you said, the teacher timeouts, learning from each other. So I feel like if we could stop isolating ourselves, and I don't mean at lunch. Sometimes you need to not be in the teacher lounge at lunch. Like if you need a minute, take the minute. But in general, like as a practice, how can we not be isolated and instead be learning with and from each other? How can we stop the isolation? That's what I would hope every educator would stop doing. What about you, Dan?
Yeah. I think that educators should, this is going to require a little bit of elaboration. I think educators should stop taking responsibility for things that are not in their zone of influence. I think that as a society, we are asking teachers to do more and more, to become more and more of a central fixture, holding together with chewing gum and twine all the various parts of a student's life, from their health, their fitness, emotional health. You know, we feed students at school. It becomes very tempting. I think there's a lot of pressures to blame, you know, outcomes, disparate and unjust outcomes later on in life, on teachers. And teachers should just flatly refuse and to understand what the job has been set up to do, what it's good for, and do that with excellence and intent and a lot of effort, and then not take responsibility for the rest of it.
If I asked 5 different people about the definition of what a teacher should be doing, I would get 5 different answers. So I think it's really interesting that you say that, because many, many hats, which I think, yes, can lead to burnout, can lead to all sorts of things. We're asking schools to be all things to all people. Interesting. I'm going to think about that more. I need to hear folks' response on that. Dan Meyer.
I'm curious too. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there are definitely things that are in a teacher's responsibility and some that are not. That's a tough one.
Okay. For help, name one. Okay. Name an example of each. And what's something that you think every teacher should not and should be doing? Because I feel like my brain goes to some things like, you know, I had teachers who were saying, well, I don't want to have my kids have to have breakfast in my classroom in the morning. That shouldn't be my responsibility to serve breakfast in the morning. But then I'm like, but then your kids are eating and they're going to be able to learn and be more focused. Should that be the teacher's responsibility? I'm not saying it necessarily should, but I'm saying would I, you know, I don't know. It gets murky for me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that we should, as a country, have a really generous social welfare net so that everyone has food at home, where a school is not the place where some students have to go to in order to receive, you know, nutrition and nourishment. That seems sad to me and uncommon in developed nations. I think that teachers should watch out for should be responsible for the mathematical development of the students they teach up to a point, but should be responsible for learning math and creating relationships in their classes. I don't think that teachers should accept responsibility for larger kinds of outcomes like the health of a democracy or international competition, who goes to the moon first. That kind of thing has historically been placed at the feet of teachers. And it's tempting when you're a teacher, I think, to like take on that responsibility because you're, you know, like it kind of develops your social importance. And I just say we should say no to that and, you know, get compensation, not in terms of, you know, social importance, but rather like in spendable dollars and monies.
I'm learning more about you, Dan. And, you know, this is what I've gotten from that answer. If you're going to dream, dream big, right?
Is that what you got from that? I don't know. I think I'm like trying to dream realistically.
No, like if we're going to say that, you know, if we're going to say maybe teachers shouldn't be responsible for serving breakfast in the morning, well, because we want every child to have access to nutritious and filling food at home and time to eat it in the morning, right? Like it's bigger than just, I don't want the teacher to have to do this. So we're dreaming big. We're saying this should be the least that students have access to, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm here now. Yeah, I'm with you. I like that dream. Yeah, dream where we take care of folks in their lives outside of schools, so schools don't have to be just the last like one linchpin for every kind of social outcome. Like currently a lot of them run through a school because we don't do a good job of setting up other ways to meet those needs, and we should.
And we're also recording this in, you know, what, 2 weeks, a week after a tragedy where students and teachers were killed in the classroom. And I think both of us are taking some deep breaths and recognizing that there's a lot of debate that is happening about what teachers' role should be in preventing this in the future. And I don't know if you've done drills in your classroom that are supposed to help mitigate disaster, but you know, we collective deep breaths is where we're at right now.
Yep. The idea of we should arm teachers is another example of like, no, we should not do that. We should solve the tendency towards violence outside of the classroom so that teachers and students can teach and learn. That sounds awesome to me.
Collective deep breath. Whew. Okay. So what else you got for me, Dan?
That was a heavy one. Really appreciate chopping that up with you as I have throughout this whole season. So let's jump over to Chris Lesniak, who hosts Debate Math Pod, the Debate Math Podcast. And Chris asks, I do, you do, we do. Is it a practice worth keeping or getting rid of? What say you, Bethany?
Ooh. So I feel like I've heard that in many teaching PDs. I do, you do, we do. I feel like I've seen like more, I do, we do, you do. Like I do it like graduated release. Like I do it, then we'll do it a little bit together. And then now you have permission to do it. Right. And I feel like, in directed draw, that's 100% true. Like I'm going to show you this and then you draw it and then you cut here and then you do it. Right. Like if we're trying to create this, like I'm teaching this new art technique. But in mathematics, I feel like that's really not what I want my classroom to look like. I want to support my students and set them up for sense making. And then I want them to try it out. And I don't want them to solve it the way it first comes to mind for me. I want to see how they make sense of it and how they solve it. And then I want us to share it with each other so we can grow together. So I think time and place for I do, you do, we do, or I do, we do, you do, or shooby dooby dooby. Yeah. You?
Yeah, I've got nothing. I have nothing to add. I thought that was just a excellent summary of a classroom I would love to be a part in, love to teach. I think it is a certain tool in the toolbox that I think is overused. But it's also a tool that can be useful in the case of, I think, like certain kinds of operations. There are some operations that, you know, do benefit from like, let me just kind of show you how like one way you might do this. I don't know. I'm like helping my kid, you know, whack a nail into a board. And, you know, like there's a moment where it's like, hey, actually, let me just like, I'll show you one way you could do this and do it. And then that's like helpful in some moments. But for so much of math, a lot of math does not relate to the operational kinds of fluency. And in those instances, it's a little bit, it's not a useful tool, I don't think, for those kinds of skills and ideas.
I'm thinking of like tool talks in my classroom. So in kindergarten, many of the tools that we use in math and just in class in general are new to the students. And if I tell them this is exactly how you should use this tool, then I feel like I'm taking a lot of the sense making away from them. But if I introduce the tool, show them how to use the tool safely, show them this is not a safe way to use the tool. Chewing on this is not safe. That's not how we use this tool. This is how we take care of it, etc. But then support different modes of using the tool that are going to help, you know, them use it to solve problems and make sense, I think. But I guess I'm just, Dan, have you heard I do, you do, we do, or is it I do, we do, you do?
I'm with you. And I think that it got clarified post tweet, but yeah, it typically, yeah, I do, we do, you do. Yeah. The gradual release of responsibility, it's often called. And I have heard people do what you described, which is, what is it? It's you do, we do, I do, like an inversion of that, like have people do a thing that I can do that's, you know, not too abstract for them. Just and then like we all do something together, and then I'll offer a summary of what we learned is one way that goes. I like that tool as well.
I think particularly in, at least I've seen in elementary classrooms, there's sometimes this fear of letting students just try it out before I've really showed them, but this is how it has to be. And what I am most excited about is supporting students and creating a classroom environment where students don't need my permission or need my direct, like, this is the only way to do it. Instead, exhausting. It's like, yes, there's lots of things we model, but there's also like, hey, what do you think? How do you think this should be used? And the joy of that exploration.
Yeah, there's a feeling of efficiency that comes from I do, we do, you do for some kinds of math, but it's undercut in my experience by what it cultivates in the students, which is like, I've got to wait until the teacher does before I can do anything. It pays off real diminishing returns over time. And it's just for me, an exhausting way to teach. Always being the bottleneck for new learning is a total drag.
Oh, what a great way to describe it. You do not want to be the bottleneck. You want to be, what's the other thing? The facilitator, what's the opposite of a bottleneck? The flowing river, help me.
Hit us up in the replies. I don't know, but the opposite of a bottleneck. That's what you want to, not be the opposite. No, you want, we got this here. We'll figure it out. We'll get back to you. Okay, well, folks, those were a few of this year's fire tweets. It's been fantastic chatting with you,
Dan,
Bethany, about all those.
You know, my favorite thing to do is interrupting you, Dan. I have to interrupt you because we can't end fire tweets, Dan, without including a tweet from you.
Oh, that's true. I do have my moments. Yeah, we should. We really should. do you have one in mind?
Well, no, Dan.
What are you doing right now?
Yes, I loved... No, I loved, you tweeted recently, you said, how many years have you been teaching? What has been like the most influential, you tweeted, how many years have you been teaching? And at this point, what has most influenced how you teach? And you gave some ideas, a methods course, a PD sessions, curriculum, TV and movies, et cetera, et cetera. And I love that you put that out there because this episode is coming out as we're wrapping up another school year. And it also got me thinking about summer and what teachers what we sometimes do during the summer, but what we might just need to do this summer for self-care. But I'm really curious. I loved that tweet. And I'm curious, Dan, what did folks say was the thing that had most influenced their teaching, and what's most influenced your teaching?
Oh yeah. People's responses to this one were really fantastic. I came into this, I was flying to the Association of Mathematics Teacher Educators Conference. And I just found myself wondering, like, so the pre-service year, the 1 year of like, you're learning how to teach is how we did it in California. Like, how much of that has still infused my practice and in what ways? I don't think I think about that stuff consciously, but I think that did like set me up with a lot of images that I would be unpacking for, you know, like going on 2 decades now working in education. I think that, like conversations with people, I think observing classes. I don't think that like the 1 day PDs, the one day development days, you know, throughout the year, 4 times per year, I don't think those stuck to me much. I think that this summer, like, I think that I have learned so much, just an embarrassment of riches from non-educational sources, like from other disciplines, from storytelling, for instance, from the practice, from like how people have constructed movies. I like, I'm proud of the way one of the aspects of my character that I'm proud of, it takes a lot to admit this as I'm sure you understand, Bethany, but to integrate lots of wacky stuff and pick from it and use that to affect my practice and teaching has been really positive. So for this summer, I don't know. I hope that people like read a good beach book and just kind of let your teaching mind rest a little bit. And in doing so, like create some openings for new ideas about education from other parts of the world. Kids, having kids has been helpful. I don't know, just like everything. It's such a big job, education. Everything is so helpful. What about you? What's an influence on your practice that, you know, might surprise me or other folks out there in MTL land?
Well, I don't know about surprise. I mean, I feel similarly. Like, methods courses absolutely impacted my teaching, but I feel like opportunities where I was able to observe other teachers and where I was able to have conversations with folks about their practice, that has deeply impacted me. And books I've read, honestly, I've learned so much from sharing with other teachers. Like, for example, maybe I'll bring student work and we'll talk about it. And we kind of create this conversation together about how we want to come back to the students based on the work we see. Those type of moments where we're collaborating and we're bringing multiple perspectives to the table, that I think has really often shifted me out of my first initial reaction or what I thought I was going to do in the classroom the next day. So that continues to surprise and delight me. And thinking about this summer, yeah, I hope that I think there's a lot of creativity and joy that can come out of the marination process when you're just kind of like sitting back and like healing yourself, whether through sleep or sunshine or time with friends and family or whatever that looks like for you. I think there's a lot of creativity that can come from that place of like fertile, like, you know, wellness, right? So that's what I think about. I don't never think of that as wasted time. I think of that as really like, you know, getting the soil ready for like all that's going to come in the fall. And that being said, I also think it could be a fun time to dip your toes into something that you're like excited to read that you might not have a chance to read during the school years that could be teaching related. So it's like a very low pressure, like, oh, you know, I've really wanted to read more by this author. I've wanted to read this article. I've wanted to dip into this topic, and not with a pressure, but just with like a curiosity. And I think so often we as teachers love learning, and to give yourself space to learn in whatever that looks like can be a real gift.
Yes. And if you need book recommendations, just hit the MTL back catalog of episodes. Loads of folks that we interviewed have some real good books out. Think about it.
One quick recommendation. Again, got to plug Anthony Smith, Allison Hint's book. I read Mathematizing Children's Literature before we did the interview, but this summer I want to read all the children's books that they mention. Like, I just want to go to the library and read all those children's books. I want to read them to my son. I want to read them to myself. So, you know, diving into some good YA children's books, just like TLC. Dan, thank you for such a rich season and a chance to have so many interesting conversations. It is genuinely a joy to learn with and from you.
Likewise, and always hope to see you folks on Twitter now and then. Let us know what you're up to this summer at MTL Show on Twitter or in our Facebook group, Math Teacher Lounge. We'll be there tuning in now and then. It's been a treat interacting with you folks over this last season. Take care, and until the new season. So long.